ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय I'm going to read this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 12, Texts 1 through 3. The title of the chapter is Creation of the Kumaras and Others. This is Maitreya speaking to Vidura, going back to the earlier parts of this third canto, the two have met. Just after Maitreya heard Krishna speaking Uddhava Gita to Uddhava, Maitreya came just after Krishna left, and Maitreya had left, he found Uddhava in the forest. This early part of this canto, and they had long conversation, very ecstatic subject matter discussed. Uddhava said he had to leave because Krishna had given him some service to do, and he also told Vidura that just before Krishna left this world, he spoke of you. He said you'll be coming soon, and that you should go here from Maitreya. He went that way. So he went and found Maitreya, presented a number of questions, and the subject matter, interestingly enough, is this the subject of creation. It's not that Vidura is a very learned person. Not that Vidura didn't know his ABCs, like how did creation happen. He knew. But he also respected that Maitreya not only knew, but he had realized knowledge. And so he was asking for his realized understanding of the knowledge that Vidura already knew. And Maitreya was very happy to have Vidura's association and be asked such nice questions, and so he began in long chapters describing in detail about the process of creation. And as you know, there are 10 subject matters in the Bhagavatam, and two of the 10 are in relation to creation. One is the portion of creation that Lord Vishnu does. The other is the portion of creation that Lord Brahma does. Sarga and Visarga. Creation, sub-creation. And I've been spending a lot of time of late, since the turn of the year, studying Sri Brahma Samhita. Plan to do a seminar on that little book. It's a heavy little book. And it very closely parallels the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, it's the same message as the Srimad Bhagavatam in a capsule form. Only it says it in a different way. And reading this section of Srimad Bhagavatam helps understand that section of, or the creation section of Brahma Samhita. By the time we're at the 12th chapter, it's the visarga, is what Brahma does. So just explain something that is when you read Sri Brahma Samhita carefully, then you get the following understanding. Mahavishnu is the source of the three principal deities who preside over the three modes of nature. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu. However, reading very carefully, especially with help of the language of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, chronologically, before the universes are created, there's a creation of what Bhaktisiddhanta calls prototype. There's a prototype Brahma, there's a prototype type Shambhu. And there's Shiradakshayi Vishnu, born from different parts of the body of Mahavishnu. Before there's even modes of nature to oversee, or universes to control those elements. Anyway, here this is Lord Brahma, and he's not the prototype Lord Brahma. The term that's used is Hiranyagarbha Brahma. And Hiranyagarbha Brahma commonly, at least in the Brahma Samhita, refers to the prototype Brahma, from whom the unlimited numbers of universes have unlimited numbers of Brahmas, all who are expansions from or empowered. Their power of creation comes from the prototype Brahma, who comes from Mahavishnu, who is a portion of a plenary portion. So even before, I'm making this point for a particular reason, because it has to do with the verses that are here. Even before there's universes within which Lord Brahma appears, within which details of creation unfold, there's what Vishnu does, the sarga portion. The elements are manifested. They're manifested from pradhan. They unfold or separate out from the undifferentiated totality of material elements that are undifferentiated. That's pradhan. By his own will and by his glancing and so forth, pradhan is transformed to mahatattva. But we don't have creation yet. We just have this cloud of material energy. And in the fifth chapter of this third canto, in the course of describing what I just said, that still in the sarga phase, there's descriptions of the demigods that control those elements. And if you think about it, we don't have universes yet. So what are these demigods that control the elements? Because we know of demigods that are controllers within universes, but you don't have a universe yet. These are prototype demigods. And in the language of Sri Brahma Samhita, the elements didn't, Bhaktisiddhanta's word is conglomerate. They didn't come together. They weren't cooperating. There's this element, that element, but they weren't coming together to form anything. In the Bhagavatam it says the demigods, they didn't know what to do. These are the primordial or the prototype demigods. So they prayed to Lord Vishnu with beautiful prayers in that chapter. And he, in response, Lord Vishnu manifested the Virat Rupa for a number of reasons. One of them was to give them the plan, like a blueprint, how to put the elements together. He also expanded within the heart of the demigods, the prototype demigods, and within every atom, energizing them, and you know, Maya Dyakshena, being, you know, giving direction. Or the capacity to conglomerate, to come together. Then from Mahavishnu's body, through his exhalation, golden seeds, tiny, tiny seeds of universes came, and they came in contact with this Mahatattva. And the Mahatattva served to cover those universes, the universal coverings. Seven layers, each 10 times bigger than. So, and then he expanded as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and then they. So the universes expanded, and the universes had coverings. Then from that Garbhadakshay Vishnu, this Brahma, not the prototype one, but the Brahma of this universe, or each of the universes, appeared. That was in the previous chapter. So now, the universe isn't ready to go yet. So some things are going to happen in these three verses. Sri Maitreya said, O learned Vidura, so far I've explained to you the glories of the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His feature of Kala. What's Kala? Time. Fascinating subject. According to Brahma Samhita, time, energy, this is, you don't have events without time. Material events. You don't have material, you don't have events as we know them without time. So time brings events into being, but also time destroys them. It's all part of the illusory display. Now you see it, now you don't. Temporality. Temporality by the influence of time. When Mahavishnu glances over Pradhan, Brahma Samhita describes Rama Devi, his consort, understands the Lord's desire. And his desire is two things. He wants to give his shadow energy something to do. And the other is he desires living entities that are within his body, wound up during the period of devastation. He wants to give them an opportunity to, through theistic conduct and properly directed activity, become relieved of their material desire and return and enjoy eternal pastimes with the Lord. So those are the two parts of his will. So his will potency, Ichha Shakti, is understood by Rama Devi, like a wife understands her husband. He had a desire. He didn't say, "Hey, Rama Devi, can you come here and help me out for a minute?" She understood. She's his internal potency. So she assisted him. The word that's used in the Brahma Samhita is niyati. So it's an aspect of his internal potency. She, through the time energy, carried the Lord's will, Ichha Shakti, and Kriya Shakti, the force of activity. Just describing the Brahma Samhita right now. This is before Lord Brahma starts doing things. But the verse says, the previous chapter I just described to you about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his feature of time. So his feature of his time is his energy. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "Time I am." But that's in the sense that the energy and the energetic are the same, because it's Kala Shakti. The energy and the energetic are the same. So Rama Devi, understanding the desire of Mahavishnu, transforms an aspect of herself into this time energy, because in the spiritual realm, time is eternal. But to have material activity, you have to have the other kind. So she transforms herself, or an aspect of herself, as the time energy, and that the aspects of this time energy, I'll say it again, the aspects of this time energy are the Lord's will, mentioned already what his will is. So there's the connect again with him, and there's fulfill the desire of the living entity, even if it's not according to his will. He's sanctioning. And then Kriya Shakti. So, you know, because without the Lord's Kriya Shakti, matter isn't going to do anything. And living entities are helpless. And the demigods are helpless. Nothing happens. Even somebody wants something to happen, nothing happens. Things happen because these potencies of the Supreme Lord are there. So the time energy is present. The time energy isn't doing anything yet, because there isn't creation yet. But the time energy is there. Now, the next verse. Brahma first created the nascent engagements, like there's five of them: self-deception, sense of death, anger after frustration, the sense of false ownership, and the illusory bodily conception, or forgetfulness of one's real identity. There isn't creation yet. There's stuff that you have to have creation. False ego was manifested before Brahma was manifested. That's part of the Lord's creation, the elements, the 24 elements, including false ego. Then Brahma, he's empowered to create the universe. So he takes these 24 elements, in this case particularly mentioned are its false ego, self-deception, and breaks it down into smaller pieces or components of false ego. Purport. Before the factual creation of the living entities in different varieties of species, the conditions under which a living being in the material world has to live were created by Brahma. So he's from the 24 elements, he's fashioning like machine parts, components that are necessary to have living entities trying to fulfill their karmic desire, their fruitive desire. Before the living entities are created, unless a living entity forgets his real identity, it is impossible for him to live in the material conditions of life. Therefore, the first condition of material existence is forgetfulness of one's real identity. Tamaha, darkness in self-knowledge. And by forgetting one's real identity, one is sure to be afraid of death, although pure living soul is deathless and birthless. This false identification with material nature is the cause of false ownership of things which are offered by the arrangements of the superior control. All material resources are offered to the living entity for his peaceful living. This is, in the higher state, the desire of the Lord being manifested as seeing that necessities are there so that they can get on with the higher purpose of life, or the real purpose of life, transcendental purpose of life. They're supplied, and then people can utilize the supply in this way or that way, with greed or with devotion. But he supplies the ingredients. All material resources are offered to the living entity for his peaceful living and for the discharge of the duties of self-realization in conditioned life. But due to false identification, the conditioned soul becomes entrapped by the sense of false ownership of the property of the Supreme Lord. That's one of the five. Sense of false ownership. So the elements the Lord supplied, Brahma supplies the capacity to think that I own them. Self-deception. Forgetfulness of one's real identity. That's three of the five. Again, the five are mentioned in the next verse. It is evident from this verse that Brahma himself is a creation of the Supreme Lord, and the five kinds of nescience which condition living entity and material existence are creations of Brahma. There are subdivisions of ignorance and nescience. It is simply ludicrous to think the living entity to be equal with the Supreme Being when one can understand that the conditioned souls are under the influence of Brahma's magic wand. Patanjali also accepts that there are five kinds of nescience, as mentioned herein. Who is Patanjali? There are six darshans. One of them comes from Patanjali. And Patanjali is the propounder of the system of yoga. And the system of yoga under Patanjali is atheistic. Because each of those six doctrines are atheistic. But even the atheists, just like there are many messages in the Bhagavatam in relation to Sankhya, that the atheist Sankhyites also point to. And even, you know, the modern scientists point to. The difference being that in the transcendental Sankhya, behind everything is there's a person, supreme person. But to some degree, the cause and effect, the push and the pull of the material creation, as understood by material scientists or these six darshans, it's also what Vaishnavas understand from Srimad Bhagavatam, with one very important difference. There's a controller behind the push, and there's the original cause of all the causes. And here, so it's not just the original cause of all causes, but we're getting downstream a little bit, where there's the elements created, but they're non-conglomerating. Brahma has appeared. He's realized his identity and his service to the Supreme Lord. He's beginning the process of creation. So he's creating these five categories of nescience before there's the activities in nescience. Patanjali agrees. He's an atheist. Patanjali. And Kapila Dev and Lord Brahma and, you know, Vyasadev, they're not atheists. So there's some concurrence with some major difference also. Text 3, seeing such a misleading creation as a sinful task, Brahma did not feel much pleasure in his activity, and therefore he purified himself by meditation on the personality of Godhead. Thus he began another term of creation. Maybe you know this from the second canto, Bhagavatam, chapter 9. Lord Brahma is born, and then his self-inquisitive spirit causes him to seek out his origin, so he climbs down the stem and doesn't find the beginning of the stem. Because there's a spiritual stem. You can't find the beginning that way. And he realizes, I can't find the beginning that way. So he goes back up to the lotus, and as the Lord directs, he performs his tapa. So, through his tapa, he becomes self-realized. And then he offers these wonderful Govinda prayers. And then, as with the Bhagavatam in the ninth chapter, so also in Brahma Samhita, he runs into a problem. He who is realized runs into a problem. And the problem that as he sees Lord Vishnu, ninth chapter, offers him his benediction. He asks for two. He's very smart. He asks for more than one. He has some questions. And he asks, please protect me from the false ego of thinking that I'm the creator. And we would be wise to pray like that before we undertake our activity, whatever that may be. Not succumb to false ego and think that we're the doer of the activity. But in his case, what he's the creation, although it's directly for the Supreme Lord, look at these things. He's creating before even before he has children. He's got all this darkness. Five kinds of nescience. He's going to slap the five kinds of nescience on the living entities that are his children. He doesn't like that. So he wants to purify himself, and so he purifies himself by... He purified himself by meditation on the personality of Godhead, then he began another term of creation, purport. Although he created the different influences of nescience, Lord Brahma was not satisfied in performing such a thankless task, but he had to do it, because most of the conditioned souls wanted it to be so. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15 that he is present in everyone's heart and is helping everyone to either remember or forget. The question may be raised, why the Lord, who is all-merciful, helps one to remember and another to forget? Actually, his mercy is not exhibited in partiality towards one and enmity towards another, the living entity, as part and parcel of the Lord, is partially independent, because he partially possesses all the qualities of the Lord. Anyone who has some independence may sometimes misuse it due to ignorance. And then varieties of ignorance. When the living entity prefers to misuse his independence and glide down toward nescience, the all-merciful Lord, first of all, tries to protect him from the trap, but when the living entity persists in gliding down to hell, the Lord helps him to forget his real position. The Lord helps the falling living entity glide down to the lowest point, just to give him the chance to see if he is happy by misuse of his independence. Even when Brahma creates, there's another paragraph, but even when Brahma creates, the ability to create comes from Lord Vishnu, and then, you know, the conglomerating of those elements takes place because of Lord Vishnu. The effect of that deluding experience happens by the potency of Lord Vishnu, but he can also remove that illusion. Like that, he can remove the illusion. So why doesn't he remove the illusion? Or the other way around, it was asked, why does he create illusion? Why does he have Brahma create illusion? And the answer is, living entities want it. And he's not interfering. And Brahma has this thankless, I have to help him to make this illusion. Like, you know, very, very expertly, so you can't get out of illusion. At least on your own effort, you can't get out of illusion. So he's highly skilled. He does it. But he doesn't like it. So he's meditating on the personality of Godhead for his purification. Paragraph. Almost all the conditioned souls who are rotting in the material world are misusing their independence, and therefore five kinds of nescience are imposed upon them. As an obedient servitor of the Lord, Brahma creates all these as a matter of necessity, but he is not happy in doing so, because a devotee of the Lord naturally does not like to see anyone falling down from his real position. Persons who do not care for the path of realization get full facilities from the Lord for executing their proclivities to the fullest extent, and Brahma helps in that procedure without fail. oh, Brahman doesn't like it, the Lord doesn't like it, the living entities want it. So he supplies it. And Brahma assists him in supplying it. Then so many other details are going to follow, along with personalities who assist the Lord in the whole process, in addition to Lord Brahma. But the trap like the rabbit hole that Alice in Wonderland fell through the hole that the dropping into nescience is misuse of independence. It's not having independence, it's the misuse of independence through the influence of false ego and then divisions. And once in the maze of material illusion, it's not a matter of just saying, okay, I'm going to properly use my free will now, and you're out. Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that, because we're very conditioned. We're habituated. We're addicted. I was conducting a home program, long story, in a remote place. Not so remote, but a place where they don't regularly get visitors. And there was a new devotee family, and they were very happy to have somebody come, so they invited all their friends. They were really enthused. They said, 30 families are going to come. And I said, don't be disappointed when not 30 families will come. He said, oh no, they all said, 30 families, they said they're going to come. I said, here's the rule of thumb, don't be disappointed. Of the people that you ask, half the people will say that they'll come. The other half can make some excuse. And of those people that say they come, only half will come. And they'll come at the end when it's prasadam time. I said, no, the 30 families will come. And they're all new, so could you do an introductory talk? And so sure enough, when we got there, nobody came, except the regulars, the practicing devotees. So I decided to have the children sit in the front, and then as they started filtering in later, they could hear me explaining to the children. They'd be very happy. Oh, he's explaining to the children. This is very nice. They explain things to children. But it was actually for them. And I asked the kids, okay, so answer this question. I'm going to tell a little story, and then you see if you have the answer to the story. Once upon a time, we came into the material world, and we thought we'd get some happiness, and we tried it this way, and it wasn't happiness. And we tried it that way, it wasn't happiness. We tried it so many different ways, it wasn't happiness. We got another body, and we tried again, and we tried again, and tried again, and every time we tried, it just like didn't work out. And after millions of lifetimes, the light goes on and said, maybe this is the wrong program. I think I'll just do a U-turn and go back to Krishna. So here's the question. Why we can't just do a U-turn and go back to Krishna? Like, it's like, you know, we did it, so we can just undo it, just go back to Krishna. It's not so easy. Why not? And, you know, they all had, you know, laughing. And then one little girl in the front, she said, the soul says yes, but the mind says, I want to enjoy my senses. And then another boy said, and I want to maintain my independence. I don't want to give up my independence. What was it? The first one was that my senses, the soul says yes, and the senses want enjoyment. Then the boy said, And I don't want to give, the mind says, I don't want to give up my independence. So, wow. Too bad the adults weren't here to hear you say, give this explanation. The new people. Meaning, once we're entangled in the complexities of material existence, even knowledge, as we very well know, theoretical knowledge, it's not enough. Right? Knowledge alone isn't enough. We know so many things. But we're attached to that process which we're now getting to know how it works. Therefore, Vidura was not just wanting knowledge, he was wanting realization. And that's what we should also want. Is not just like, how does it work? But get the realization of what the, identify the enemy. You're going to go into a battle. And this is this misuse of independence, influenced by and then covered further by false ego. It's the first element that appears. It's the last element to go. It's where we need to apply attention when we're engaged in devotional practices. Misconception of self. And so on. The five varieties of nescience. Self-deception. They're primordial. They're before we even exist. They're ready to keep us busy. And then we start getting busy and we just don't recognize the ropes that are tying us. So understanding this helps one get free. If it's received from the right source and received in the right mood and applied. Another is that it's the as above, so below, by understanding the distinction between the illusory existence of material life, then we can get a clearer picture of transcendental life. Like life that's devoid of these nesciences with self-deception and forgetting who you are and thinking oneself the proprietor of things. The spiritual conception, devotional service that's done devoid of those nesciences, is everything is for Krishna. It's a very high stage. But it's where the process of devotional service, hearing and chanting and serving and worshipping and so on, lead one to that position. It's a contrast. So we'll continue some more. A little bit more. Any discussion? Yep.
What is the difference between the theoretical knowledge and the realized knowledge that we should be seeking?
What's the difference? It's gyan and vigyan. It's practically applied with faith. When we practically apply the real knowledge with faith, we get realization. Maybe not instantly, because our faith may not be so strong, we may not be so consistently applying. That's the behavior is application. The quality is with faith, and the reciprocation comes from Krishna, the same source as the knowledge. He gives the realization. It's the connection with Krishna. Anything else? Yeah.
What is the position of Brahma Samhita with respect to various religions?
It's a Samhita. It's a particular category of literature. It's an explanation of the Vedic wisdom. Not exactly Puranic. It's a Samhita. That's the category. It's Lord Brahma's exposition on the main is the invocation verse, the first verse. The source of everything is a person. Anadir adir govinda sarva karana karanam. The cause of everything is a person. And his name, he has a name, Krishna. That's the position of Brahma Samhita in Vedic literature.
Is it composed by Vyasadeva?
Huh?
Is it also composed by Vyasadeva?
It's composed, as far as I understand, it's composed by Brahma. Or one authorized by him to compose it. It's composed by Brahma. It's his Samhita, as far as I understand.
He said that we have to choose Krishna.
He said what?
We have to choose, it is up to us that we have to choose Krishna. So, when we say that, if we decide that
we have our conditioning that's working against us. That's the idea. So there's the theory, I want to go back, and then there's the application of the theory. We have to take responsibility for our so many lifetimes and extended misuse of free will. We're responsible for that. So we have to work our way through that with faith and continuing to, you know, abhyasa, continuing to practice faithfully. Connecting to the sources of transcendental wisdom, ultimately connecting to Krishna. Okay, to be continued. Hare Krishna.